Now to our series, Voices for Civil Rights. All this month, we're exploring a new collection of interviews about the civil rights movement conducted by the Southern Oral History Program at UNC Chapel Hill. Over the last year and a half, oral historians traveled the country to document the experiences of laypeople and leaders from the movement. It's part of a joint project between the Smithsonian Institution and the Library of Congress. Seth Koch coordinated the effort, and he joins me in the studio each Friday. Good morning, Seth.
Good morning.
So what do you have for us today?
Well, I brought a clip with me from an interview we conducted with Freeman Hrabowski in this past July. And Dr. Hrabowski is an educator, he's a mathematician, and right now he's the president of the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. He grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, and in our interview he discusses a sort of moment that he experiences in church. He's a self-described math nerd, didn't like church much, but he's sitting in the back and he hears this guy who's giving him a different message than he had been hearing from a lot of members of his community in Birmingham, which is that you don't have to take this, we can do something about it, this being racial segregation, from a preacher he hadn't heard before. And he says, who is this guy? And someone says, oh, this is this guy, Martin Luther King.
And I'll never forget that first day that I saw that. After hearing Dr. King, I said, Mama, Dad, I've got to go. And they said, absolutely not. No way. And I did something you just did not do. I said, then you guys are hypocrites. Well, you see, that may not sound like a big deal today, but at that time, you did not say disrespectful things to your parents. My dad could not believe I had said that. He said, go to your room and stay there. And it was the next morning that they had been up all night. But after being up all night, they came in and said I could go. My point was, you make me go to all these meetings. I hear all this stuff. You tell me to think for myself. I'm thinking for myself. I want to do the right thing. I want to do what Dr. King, somebody you say you admire, wants me to do, and yet you're saying no. And they came in to explain. It wasn't that they didn't trust me. They did not trust me to be in that jail with those white people who didn't care about our children, about black children. And they said, you're our treasure. We don't trust you to them. And I understand that now. I often ask myself, would I have allowed my child to go? I'm not sure I would have. But somehow they came in, they had been praying, and literally their eyes were red, and we prayed together and we cried. Now, I was crying because I was worried about them, worried about me, but quite frankly, all of a sudden I'd gotten really frightened. I said, oh my God. And my cousin, who was in the other bed, was laughing because he said, no way am I letting those dogs bite me. I am not going. He was 2 years old, and he said, Freeman can be stupid if he wants to. So it wasn't that I was that courageous. I did believe in the cause. I had said I was going to go, and I couldn't back out.
Was this a common theme in the interviews you conducted, either the clash with parents or being galvanized by certain events?
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing to think about this moment, and Dr. Hrabowski's 12 and a half at this time. When I was 12 and a half, my conflicts with my parents were over whether I got to sit in the front seat, you know, of our Chevrolet station wagon. And it's really a profound moment to think about parents being confronted with really this kind of opportunity by their children and maybe unsure that their kid would be the right kind of sacrifice to make the kind of progress that they were determined to make.
And of course, Freeman Hrabowski's parents had reason to be worried, right? People who joined in these protests, they faced real threats of violence.
Absolutely. And I should say that the children's crusade, so-called, that Freeman Hrabowski joined had fire hoses turned on them. They had dogs sicked on them by the notorious Bull Connor, the police commissioner for Birmingham. And that brings us to the second clip that I brought, an interview that we conducted with Moses Newsom in September. And Moses Newsom was a journalist for the Tri-State Defender in Memphis and the Baltimore African-American. And he was literally on the ground for, it seems like, every significant civil rights event that took place in the 1950s and 1960s. And he was also a journalist who rode with the Freedom Riders through the South in 1961.
And who are the Freedom Riders again?
The Freedom Riders were a group of activists who decided to test a Supreme Court ruling that struck down racial segregation and interstate travel. They got on Greyhound buses, they got on Trailways buses, and they rode through the South. And Moses Newsom was on a Greyhound bus that rode relatively uneventfully through the South until they get to Alabama and once again encounter Bull Connor. And it is Mother's Day in May 1961, and the Greyhound bus encounters a mob outside of Anniston, Alabama. I should say they're a very well-dressed mob, their members having come directly from church, who attack the bus with bats and sticks, and basically a car chase ensues. The Greyhound bus is stopped, tires are slashed, and the bus is firebombed.
They finally made a break through one of the windows, and they threw this firebomb thing in the seat just behind me, which is an empty seat. And I got a few burns on the back of the ear and that sort of thing, but nothing serious. Suddenly, it was pitch black on that bus. And a couple of people got out of windows and caught rides. Several of us was sort of trapped on the bus there until we could get out. I said, well, I'm going to be the last guy off this bus. Nobody gets trapped on here. So I just put a handkerchief over my mouth and nose and that sort of thing and hung around as long as I could. And it started getting hot on there. It was time to get off. So it got off. And I tell you, when you stepped off that bus and you looked around and you saw these people crawling around trying to get the smoke out of their chest, and people crawling and coughing and gagging. It was one of those sights that make you wonder why Americans are doing that sort of thing to fellow Americans who are just trying to exercise their rights. But eventually, that bus burned right down, broad open daylight. They burned down this expensive Greyhound bus.
So it was the mob's intention to frighten people away, but as we heard from Freeman Hrabowski's story, incidents like this actually ended up drawing more activists in.
Absolutely, and that's in large part because journalists like Moses Newsom were there to chronicle it, and photographers were there too, and the image of the burning Greyhound bus is still in circulation, and when people around the country see an image like that, they're horrified and minds change.
Seth Koch is coordinator of Oral History Digital Initiatives at the Southern Oral History Program at UNC Chapel Hill. He's bringing us oral histories of the civil rights movement all this month. Thanks, Seth.
Thank you.
These oral histories are being added to the holdings at the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress, which will make them available online this fall. In the meantime, you can learn more about the Smithsonian's Civil Rights History Project and hear all the oral histories we broadcast on WUNC at our website, wunc.org.